Hello, everyone. This is James Dobson with Family Talk, and I have a very special offer for all of you who are listening today. You know, there's no higher calling as a Christian mom or dad than to teach children the gospel, the good news, and to provide spiritual training within the home. That's the most important task. But unless parents get serious about leading their families in godliness, they could, and in some cases are likely to, grow up without a strong faith, the faith of the generations that preceded them. And that's why I want to equip you with the sound teaching and practical wisdom that you need to raise a family of disciples for Christ. In a brand new collection of 8 DVDs titled Building a Family Legacy, I tackle common parenting questions and offer advice and encouragement based on the firm foundation of biblical principles. The Building a Family Legacy 8 DVD series is my gift to you to say thank you for your suggested donation of $50 or more. Now, I will accept no royalty or any portion of this donation. Every dollar will go to help support Family Talk, and we could use your assistance at this time. So I pray that this resource will be a great blessing to you and the children God has placed in your life. Request your copy by visiting drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. And thank you for your continued support and for listening to Family Talk.
Folks, I hate Barbie dolls. I've got a crusade going against Barbie dolls, probably because I have a house full of them. I didn't really realize the impact of those dolls until it was too late, because Barbie sets up an image that will be impossible for any child to meet later on. See, you take a little 3-year-old girl who ought to be playing with teddy bears and the traditional memorabilia of childhood, and instead, here is Barbie, this perfect creature who does not have flaws. Barbie does not have acne on her face. Barbie is busty. It's a phenomenon for a 13-year-old girl. Folks, there is not a flaw anywhere on Barbie's pink body except for a little statement on her bottom that says she's made in Hong Kong.
The clip we just listened to is from the first part of a program titled Preparing for Adolescence. Hi, everyone. Ryan Dobson here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and we are so excited that the film series we've been talking about for so long that actually originated in 1979. 3 of those are being re-released along with 5 new films, and it starts tomorrow. It's called Building a Family Legacy, and on the 1st through the 5th, you can screen the very first film for free, no charge. All you have to do is sign up at buildingafamilylegacy.com. You can screen it in your church, your small group, your home, anywhere with an internet connection, as long as you sign up at buildingafamilylegacy.com. And if you enjoy it, the rest of the series is available on video on demand. But for now, in celebration of the release of Building a Family Legacy, we're going to wind back the clock and enjoy the audio portion of my dad's presentation on preparing for adolescence from that original film series. So here now is my dad, Dr. James Dobson, from way back in 1978 for the second part of Preparing for Adolescence on today's edition of Family Talk.
It seemed unfair to reward a child for something that he didn't earn, and that's bad. But what's worse, to destroy or reject a child for something that's not his fault. And yet this is the value system of our culture, and it is very widespread. You take 2 children into a restaurant at 2 years of age, one's cute and one's not cute, and watch what the waitress will do. She'll gush all over one and leave the other one and his parents sitting there as though he doesn't exist. It is amazing to me how we evaluate human worth on this way. So, folks, if a child is too tall or too short or too fat or too thin, or his ears stick out, or his nose is hooked one way or another, or his hair isn't right, or he's got a tornado of freckles on his face, or his fanny's a little too big, or his feet are too big, It really does not matter what it is. If he has one flaw, all that it takes is for other children who are amazingly creative in this regard to identify a nickname to spotlight that one flaw, and he becomes the flaw, and self-esteem starts to deteriorate. And these nicknames are amazing. This kid across the street from us named Michael. This kid was 5x5 when he was 3 years of age. He was on the move. I've never seen a child like that in my life. The big kid stayed out of his way because he was dangerous. And the kids in the neighborhood named him Michael the Motorcycle. Folks, if you knew him, that is the most appropriate nickname. If there ever was a Honda in tennis shoes, that's Michael. But they will find a nickname, and a child knows it, and he's aware of it, and then it begins to build and grow. As he comes into adolescence, it reaches a peak. You and I don't escape it either, folks. We have the same kind of pressure on us. Only as we get a little older, see, youthfulness becomes paramount. Where in order to be a valuable human being, I got to stay eternally young. And that's kind of hard to do. In fact, that irritates me a great deal, probably because I'm now 42 years of age. I would be 43, but I was sick a year. Folks, there are 4 billion people on the face of this earth, 4 billion of us, and every single one of us is aging. There's not a single exception anywhere on the earth. If you're not aging, you're in real trouble. 4 billion of us, and every one of us is aging, yet I'm supposed to feel guilty if it happens to me. And how ridiculous that is. For the natural, normal process of aging, why should I feel guilty? And I can't hold it back anyway. You know, it happens so quickly. About the time your face clears up, your mind gets fuzzy. How many of you are teachers? May I see the hands of you who are teachers? We got a good representation. Have you, those of you who are at the elementary school level, ever heard yourself standing before, say, a third grade class or maybe second, and saying, okay, class, we're going to play a math game. That's a good way to drill. And so in order to compete, we're going to choose teams. And so the teacher reached out, and she takes Johnny and Mary, the ever-popular co-favorites, and they move to the two sides of the room, and she says, now what I want you to do, Mary, you're going to choose first, and we'll choose teams, and then we'll compete with each other. And so, Mary, you go ahead. Well, Mary reaches out, and she takes the reigning intellectual superstar in the class. Mary hadn't seen the IQ scores, but Mary knows who's bright. Everybody knows who's bright. And that child moves to the side of the room with his captain. Okay, Johnny, you take the next one. And Johnny takes the second brightest kid in the room, and Mary takes the third brightest, and Johnny takes the fourth, and the group is shrinking. It's getting smaller and smaller. And there's a little bit of tension that begins to be developed in the air, because the kids are aware, if the teacher isn't, that somebody is about to be humiliated. And they continue to choose, and it's down to 10, and the tension is greater. And then it's down to 5. And those 5 who remain all have a silly little grin on their face because they don't know what to say. How do you explain the fact that you're not chosen for something that takes intelligence? And they knew they wouldn't be chosen anyway. See, they know whose team they want to be on, but more importantly, they want to be chosen because there is disaster about to occur to somebody. And then it's down to 3. And if you could measure all 3 of those kids, you'll find that their little hearts are going dum, 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 dum. And the hands are sweating a little, and the mouth is dry, and their eyes are reflecting the anxiety. And then it's down to 2, and then 1. And that one that's left is a little kid named Arnie, and he slides down in his backbone, and he's been thinking, somebody take me. Won't somebody take me? But there ain't any chance of anybody taking him. Arnie can't even read, much less do math. Who's going to choose him? They come all the way to the end, and Mary says, you take him, and Johnny says, no, you take him. And the teacher says, Arnie, would you go over here? And then, just like everybody knew he would, guess who fouls up? Guess who causes his team to lose, and everybody says, boo, Arnie. Guess who has to come back and sit down? And guess who wishes that he could crawl in a hole and just die? If he could get away somehow. He did what he knew he would do. It happened yesterday, and it'll happen tomorrow. And you see, the trouble with Arnie is that he doesn't have any explanation for it. When you fail or when I fail, I say, yeah, but don't forget, I'm at the hospital and I wrote this book and I had these successes and I know some people that like me. See, not many, but a few. When you fail, you have those same rationalizations. Arnie has never done anything right in his life. He doesn't have any successes to balance it with. All he knows is that it works for everybody else and it doesn't work for me. And then guess who, folks, about 30 years later, will be such an incredible bore, such an uncreative, incredible bore, and there won't be anybody there to tell him that his light went out in the third grade. Self-esteem crumbled because of learning difficulties. At least half the kids come out of our school feeling dumb. I'm convinced of that, probably more than that. Even some who are bright come out feeling dumb because of the matter of underachievement and constant failure. Did you know, folks, that you can take a fish, a walleye pike, in fact, and put him in a tank of water with some minnows in it, and in a short time, the walleye pike will be in the tank all by himself because he does his thing with the minnows. And you get to feeding him, and he gets to eating the minnows, and when he gets used to that, slide a piece of glass down the center of the tank and put the walleye pike on one side and put the minnows then on the other. And the walleye pike can see the minnows, but he can't see the glass. And so he comes after him like he's been doing. And inevitably, you see, he hits the front of that glass and bounces back. Well, that's strange to him. That never happened before. Who knows what in the world goes on in the mind of walleye pike. He'll swim around a little bit, and he'll take another run at it. Only the second time, he'll swim a little slower than the first time. And he hits that glass and bounces back again. He swims around, that's curious, can't explain it. They were there yesterday, what's going on? And he waits a little longer and swims a little slower and hits the glass again and bounces back. He will continue that process each time waiting longer and each time swimming slower until finally the behavior is extinguished. He does not know how to explain it. I just can't get him. Not available. At that point, having not tried anymore, you slide the glass out of the tank and put it aside and let the minnow swim in and around the walleye pike. But he's already got the message. They're not available. I saw them before and couldn't get them. How come I can't get them now? No chance. And the walleye pike will stay there with his favorite kind of food right in front of him, even bumping him on the gills. And he will starve to death in a tank of water filled with the kind of food he likes best, because his behavior has been extinguished. Now, folks, intelligence is related to worth. And when you take a little first grader and he toddles off to school on his wobbly legs carrying a little Mickey Mouse lunch bucket, and he's anxious to get there and he's a little immature fellow, and he's so vulnerable, and he gets there and he's excited, and they're going to have a spelling bee, and they're going to climb a mountain. There's a big chart on the wall, and each right word, and he moves up toward the top of the mountain. And everybody else is almost up, and he's still on the ground floor. Hits the glass and bounces back. Maybe he's in the second or third grade, and he had a little test, and he went home. He really tried. He honestly tried. Didn't give it much, but he doesn't have much in the way of self-discipline, and he came back, and he tried. And maybe, this doesn't happen very often, but maybe an insensitive teacher puts a zero or a sad face or an F on his paper, and maybe as she's handing it back, she allows three kids around him to see it, and they snicker. Boom, he hits the glass and bounces back. Brings home a bad report card, and his dad slams his fist down on the table and says, "Stupid, why can't you be like your sister?" He hits the glass and bounces back. I tell you, folks, it doesn't take much of that for a very young child to decide it's not available. It's okay for those guys. I don't understand it, but I can't have it. And self-esteem starts to disintegrate, especially in those vulnerable early years. And I think we have to be very careful about failure in the early years of school. Now, it's very interesting to me, friends, that these two factors, physical attractiveness and intelligence, represent the two main things on which we evaluate human worth in our culture. And it's also interesting to me that physical attractiveness is number one and intelligence is number two in the early years. As males in our society go through adolescence, then physical attractiveness, and under that I include athletic ability, which is a dimension of the physical, drops to second place, and intelligence emerges as number one through the rest of life. For females in our society, despite the women's liberation movement and all that influence, it still remains pretty much physical attractiveness number one, intelligence number two throughout life. The reason the average woman would rather have beauty than brains is because she knows the average man can see better than he can think. Only half of you were clapping. And I know which half. Third, what else do kids feel when they feel inadequate and inferior? They feel unloved. Maybe that's really the essence of it. Physical attractiveness, intelligence, and love. Those are the things we base worth on in our society. And the question is what you do for those who are getting ready to come into adolescence. Folks, you cannot head off all feelings of inferiority, and you won't, nor must you. I think kids profit from some of these feelings, and it is not necessary to eliminate them all. My two toughest years of life were the 7th and 8th grades. In fact, the only two tough years of my life were the 7th and 8th grades, with the exception of this year, which has been very difficult for us. But those 2 years, 7th and 8th grades, have contributed more to what I approve of in myself today than any other 2 years of my life. My desire to help people, my desire to accomplish something, my desire to go on to school, a lot of things, my understanding of kids, a lot of things grew out of those years. So you can't prevent it all. So what I am recommending is that you talk to your kids prior to adolescence and just brace them for it, so that when it comes, they realize I'm not the only one and it won't last forever, and to minimize the power of it. And you can do that, I think. I wrote about this in Hide or Seek in 1974. And if I were writing that book today, there was one main feature that I would add to it that's really not there, having to do with this matter of talking about and diffusing feelings of inferiority from the early years. I think you would be wise, folks, to start talking about inferiority with your 3-year-olds. Start with confidence. Start talking about confidence, about the fact that they got up in front of the whole church in the Christmas party and had the confidence to hold the head up and talk. That showed that you like yourself. And then a little later on, talk about inferiority. When you see somebody that can't look at you when he talks and he's got his head down and his eyes are kind of sad and his fingernails are all chewed off, when you see people that are showing signs of inferiority, ask your children, what do you think they're feeling? Maybe they're doing that because they don't like themselves, and then get into inferiority. Explain what it is so that it's not like a dragon jumping on them from behind when they come into the teen years. Number two is conformity. Show them how these two are directly linked together. The more inferior you feel, the less you can withstand the pressure of the group. And this is why teenagers move in such a herd. And they do move in a herd. Especially teenage choirs. Have you ever seen a teenage choir where every child looked exactly the same? All the girls, you know, there's a million ways you can fix the hair. All of them have it identical. Maybe you read in the paper about a teen choir down in Miami that was singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And that's an emotional song, and boy, they were going at it. And they were singing Glory, Glory, Hallelujah. And they got so excited that one of the little girls down in the front row really got carried away. It's kind of warm, and she passed out. Boom, hit the deck over here. Well, the director had put a lot into the program, and he didn't want to blow the whole show. So he just went on directing, and they gathered around this little girl and tried to get her back together. But the possibility of fainting had been planted in 67 other impressionable heads. And it wasn't about 2 minutes till a kid blanched and buckled and disappeared from the back row. Now you got a trend going, see? You got two. Number three, in a few seconds, fell off this end of the risers. And it started to spread through that crowd. And by the time they reached the final, His Truth Is Marching On, 20 kids lay flat on the ground. That's called conformity. Now, you see, it's very important that you take this opportunity on this trip that you're taking with your kids to show how feelings of inferiority and conformity combine to create disasters for them. Set up a little scene which is more than likely to occur for your child in this way. Johnny, let's suppose that you're now 15 years of age instead of 12. And let's suppose that you're in the back seat of a car and the driver of the car is 16 and he's the only one in your group that has a car. And every now and then he comes and he picks up his friends and they go riding in the evening. And you really are flattered to be one of those kids that he picked up. He didn't have to get you, but he did. And you're glad to be included. And you're having a lot of fun. And you want to be liked by that group a great deal. Because this is the in group at school, and you want to be one of them. And you're sitting in the back seat over on the left-hand side. And this kid named Jack, who's driving, you see, is kind of the leader. And everybody looks up to him. And you all are laughing, and you're joking, and having a good time. And Jack then reaches into his pocket and he takes out a little bottle of red pills. And you know what those are. Those are called reds. And that's drugs. And you don't want to use them. You know that they're harmful to your body. Yet Jack takes one and puts it in his mouth and everybody says, "Hey, big deal." And then he passes it over to the guy next to him over by the window. And he takes one. He doesn't think anything about it. Puts it in his mouth. The bottle is passed into the back seat. You hoped it wouldn't be, but it was. And here it comes. Now, it's over there by that window, and he's taking one, and you're very nervous because it's coming your way. And you're going to have to make a decision. And the one next to the window over there takes one of those pills, and the guy in the middle takes it, and you've got a little sweat on your hands, and your mouth is dry, and your heart's thumping. And what are you going to do? Are you going to go along, or are you not going to go along? You've got to make a decision. You don't have any time to think. You can't say, "Let me out. I'll give you an answer in an hour. I'll go talk to somebody. I'll talk to my pastor. I'll pray about it." You can't say anything. You've got to make a decision. And here it comes. And finally, they hand it to you. And everybody's laughing. And your hands are shaking a little bit. And you reach out, not knowing what to say, and you take it. You know it's not right. You know it's not what God wants you to do. You know it's harmful to your body, and it's not even what you want. But do you have the courage, because of these feelings, to say, "I will be different"? And so you say to yourself, "Well, I've always wanted to know what drugs were all about anyway, and I'll just do it this one time. And after all, it's not heroin. It's just a little red pill, and it's probably no big deal, and I'll just do it this once." Johnny, doing it once makes it very, very easy to do it twice. And twice makes it easy to do it three times. And furthermore, the kind of guys that will hand that to you will also hand you something else later. Because when you're running in that crowd, it's going to happen again. And that's exactly how a lot of kids go down the path of drugs. And you're going to have to decide right now if you're going to conform or not. Johnny, this is why the Bible says, "Be not conformed to this world." That's why that message is in the Bible, because conformity can destroy you, not only with regard to drugs, but sex and alcohol and a lot of other things that you know are not right and are harmful.
My goodness, that is so true. Can you believe how true that still is today? That's a clip from 1978 from my dad's original film series, and that was on preparing for adolescence. And that's what this entire new film series, Building a Family Legacy, is about. It's about passing on the values and principles grounded in the faith in Jesus Christ that leads to a successful life. Hi, everyone. This is Ryan Dobson for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. And as I mentioned at the top of the program, we are so excited to announce the release of our new film series titled Building a Family Legacy, and it starts tomorrow. Regardless of where you're at in life, your legacy matters. The new Building a Family Legacy series is tremendously compelling. It features books, films, study guides, and Bible studies designed to help you reclaim your family for God's glory. In celebration of its release, we are streaming the first film in the new series for free starting October 1st through the 5th. You can sign up by visiting buildingafamilylegacy.com. Again, buildingafamilylegacy.com to watch the first film. And if you enjoy it, you can watch the rest of the film starting on October 1st on video on demand. We'd also like to give you some of our most popular and mobile-friendly resources, starting with Family Talk's Legacy Digital Resource Guide. It's interactive, convenient, and the perfect companion for helping you create those legacy moments with your family. Just text your email address and the keyword legacy to 51555 to get it now. Again, your email address and the keyword legacy to 51555. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.